I'm Bruce Berkowitz, Chairman of the Board of The St. Joe Company. It's my pleasure to welcome all of you. In accordance with the notice of meeting, I call to order the 2019 Annual Meeting of Shareholders. Each of you have registered as you entered the meeting. If anyone hasn't registered, please do so at this time. We will conduct this meeting in accordance with the agenda you were given as you entered in the meeting room this morning. Meeting room. Please note that after the formal meeting is adjourned, there will be an opportunity for shareholder questions and discussion. On the reverse side of the agenda is a list of the rules of conduct for this meeting. To ensure an orderly meeting, we require that all participants abide by these rules. With us today are representatives of Grant Thornton, the company's independent registered public accounting firm, who will be available to answer any appropriate questions during the Q&A portion of the meeting. The company's general counsel, Lisa Walters, will act as secretary of the meeting. We are being assisted today in the tabulation of proxies and ballots by Mike Barbera from Broadridge Financial Solutions. At this time, I appoint Mike Barbera as Inspector of Elections. The notice of the meeting has been mailed to each shareholder of record as of March 26, 2019. The Inspector of Elections has informed me that 57,640,269 shares of the company's voting stock are present in person or by proxy, constituting a quorum for today's meeting. A list of shareholders on March 26, 2019, the record date, may be inspected by any shareholder who is present. The final report of the Inspector of Elections will include the votes, if any, of shareholders present and voting in person. The Inspector of Elections has provided an affidavit of meeting to show that notice of the meeting was given on or about April 10, 2019. A copy of both the notice and the affidavit will be incorporated into the minutes of this meeting. Okay, next, I will describe each proposal to be acted upon, and then we'll take the vote. Since no director nominations or proposals for business were properly filed by a shareholder in advance of this meeting, the business of this meeting is limited to the following three proposals. The first proposal before the shareholders is the election of six directors to serve for a one-year term until the next annual meeting. I'm standing for re-election as a director today along with the following nominees: Cesar Alvarez, Howard Frank, George Gonzalez, James Hunt, Thomas Murphy. All of these nominees are present today. We recommend the election of these nominees. The second proposal is the ratification of the appointment of Grant Thornton as our independent registered public accounting firm for the 2019 fiscal year. The Audit Committee retained the services of Grant Thornton to audit the company's financial statements for 2019, and the Board recommends that the shareholders ratify the appointment of Grant Thornton. The third proposal is a proposal to approve on a non-binding advisory basis the compensation paid to our named executive officers as described in the compensation discussion and analysis section. The compensation tables and related narrative disclosures set forth in the company's 2019 annual meeting proxy statement. We recommend the approval of the compensation of our named executives. Right. We will now vote on the proposals. Those shareholders voting in person should now mark their ballots. If you have previously voted by proxy, you do not need to vote again today unless you want to change your vote. If you would like a ballot, please raise your hand and one will be provided to you. We'll take a short break while we allow the gentlemen to vote. No rush, no pressure. any other ballots? So the Inspector of Elections will collecting and has now collected outstanding ballots. Again, if you have brought your proxy, you wish to vote by ballot, please provide your ballot or proxy to the Inspector of Elections at this time. Okay, will the Inspector of Elections please report the results of the balloting?
Certify that a majority of the votes cast have been voted for the election of each of the nominees as director of the company. In addition, votes cast favoring the ratification of the appointment of Grant Thornton has exceeded the votes cast opposing the action. Finally, the proposal to approve the compensation of the named executive officers has received more votes for than votes against.
Thank you. I hereby declare that the director nominees have been duly elected, that the appointment of Grant Thornton as the company's independent registered public accounting firm has been ratified, and that shareholders approve the compensation of the named executive officers. This concludes the official business of the 2019 annual meeting. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you. This time, prior to opening up for questions, I'd like to ask George Gonzalez, the company's president and CEO, to provide a brief overview of the company's operations.
Good morning. I want to welcome everyone joining us on the webcast. I particularly want to welcome those of you that are here in person. We greatly appreciate the time you took to visit us. We always encourage all of our shareholders to visit us and tour our assets and properties. This morning, before the market opened, we filed an 8K and posted a shareholders meeting presentation on our website. I'm going to take you through that presentation in a couple of minutes. For those of you on the webcast, you can download the presentation from our website at joe.com. That's joe.com. For ease of access, we created a temporary link of the presentation on our homepage at the top right-hand corner. After today's meeting, the presentation will be in the investor relations section of our website. Before I start the presentation, I would like to show you a brief 2.5-minute video clip of aerial drone footage of some of the projects that we currently have under development or construction. This footage was taken just last week, so it's pretty current. For those of you on the webcast, we also posted a link of the video on our homepage. Thank you. At last year's presentation, if you recall, we provided a lot of information and maps of projects that were in the planning process. As you can see, we've already initiated many of those projects. Now I would like to take you through this year's presentation. It is a total of 12 slides. Each slide has a number at the top right-hand corner. I will refer to that number as I go through the presentation so it is easy to follow for those of you on the webcast. After the presentation is over, we'll open up the floor for questions that either Bruce or I will be happy to answer. Slide 2 contains a forward-looking statement. I'm sure our attorneys would be delighted if I read the entire thing, but honestly, I don't have the stamina, neither do you, so please read at your own leisure. Ever since the management transition occurred in November of 2015, we have been focused on a two-stage process to create value for our shareholders. The first stage was to create a foundation, and the second stage is to execute a growth plan. Slide 3 contains the three major components of the foundation stage. Right-size the Joe Enterprise, act like responsible owners, focus on the home team advantages, and create a growth plan. During this foundation period, we were able to change the trajectory of the operations of the company from a negative to a positive. We're actually now making money. We have a long way to go, but everything starts with a good foundation. Slide 4 includes the major components of our growth plan. These components are consistent with the business strategy we have articulated over the last couple of years in our 10-Ks and other disclosure documents. Build recurring income, collaborate to accelerate, make every square foot count, and grow residential, commercial, and hospitality. Slide 5 is a spotlight on Walton County, since it is one of the two counties that our growth plan is focused on. This slide has some data points that demonstrate why we are focused on Walton County. Last year, Walton County was the fifth fastest growing county in the entire country with a 4.5% growth and had $2.2 billion of single family home sales. The fifth fastest growing county in the entire country and $2.2 billion of single family home sales. Over the last 8 years, Walton County was the fourth fastest growing county in Florida out of 67 counties with 29.7 growth over that period of time, that 8 year period. We own over 13,500 acres in Walton County, all of it in South Walton, near 30A and the beaches, and we have over 24,000 residential units entitled just by the Bay Walton Sector Plan alone in Walton County. Slide 6 is a spotlight on Bay County, since it's the second county that our growth plan is focused on. This slide contains some data points that demonstrate why we are focused on Bay County. Last year, Bay County had over 15 million visitor room nights, and over $2 billion in real estate transactions, which is up by 13% from the year before. Last year, the airport broke the 1 million passenger threshold, which is up by 238% from 2009, which was the last year at the previous location. We own over 120,000 acres in Bay County, and we have over 145,000 residential units entitled just by the Bay Walton Sector Plan alone. It's not possible to talk about Bay County without mentioning Hurricane Michael. Obviously, it was a devastating event that caused a lot of damage, especially in eastern Bay County, in areas like Panama City and Mexico Beach. Panama City Beach was not impacted nearly as much, and Walton County was almost not impacted at all. I'm proud of how our employees have selflessly volunteered to help our friends and neighbors in need, and how our foundation has been able to provide over $1 million to local relief efforts directly to those that need it the most. This is a responsibility that comes with being part of the home team. Hurricane Michael reduced the supply of housing, hotels, offices, and commercial space in the affected areas. We believe the demand for housing is the greatest need right now, which is the reason why we have accelerated several new residential projects, especially in East Bay County. We have made several announcements about these projects over the last few weeks, and we plan to make more announcements. We're fulfilling a need in our community that also happens to be good for our business. It is a win-win. There are also some encouraging signs. For example, for the first quarter of 2019, airport passenger traffic increased by 29% compared to the first quarter of 2018. For the first quarter of 2019, tourism in Panama City Beach increased by 13% when compared to the first quarter of 2018. Even before Hurricane Michael, there was broad market demand in the area. Slide 7 lists examples of some of that demand as it relates to our assets. For residential home sites, as of the end of the first quarter of 2019, we have a backlog of 773 residential home sites under contract, representing $74.5 million in revenue over the next few years. It's important to point out that this backlog does not include Latitude Margaritaville or any of the new residential communities that we're planning. Commercial leasing. Again, as of the end of the first quarter of 2019, we have over 811,000 square feet of rentable commercial space, which is 93% leased. This represents a 47% increase since March 31st of 2015, when we had 548,000 square feet of rentable commercial space, and we had an 84% occupancy rate. So in 4 years, we have increased the square feet by 47% while increasing the occupancy by nearly 10%. Apartment units. Pier Park Crossings, which is our new 10-building, 240-unit apartment project that is currently under construction in the Pier Park area. We completed 48 units on May 10th, and all of those units are already leased. We have a prospect tenant list of 500 and growing. We anticipate fully leasing the remaining 8 buildings as they are completed over the next few months. The demand has exceeded our expectations, so we have decided to start the permitting process for the second phase with an additional 120 units. The second phase will bring the grand total number of apartment units of Pier Park Crossings to 360. As part of our growth plan, slide 8 shows the 9 projects that we initiated development or construction in 2018 and the 30 projects that we intend to initiate development or construction in 2019. We listed these projects in the most recent 10-K, and we provided an update on construction activity in our recent first quarter filing. As you can see, these projects include all of our segments. 11 of the projects in the 2019 list have already been initiated, including 4 new ones since we filed for our first quarter, for the first quarter just a few weeks ago. Those are our First Watch Restaurant at Topsail, Origins Crossings Apartments, Sacred Heart Healthcare Facility at Origins, and the new Brandonville Residential Community in East Bay County. We anticipate having initiated several more by the time we issue our second quarter report. We also have a pipeline of projects behind these projects that are still in the planning stage. It is important to note that these projects are based on market demand. In addition to our local knowledge of the market, we routinely perform third-party market studies to calibrate that demand. Slide 9 is a progress report on Latitude Margaritaville at Watersound. Ever since we announced the execution of a letter of intent with the Minto Group last year, our collective teams have been very busy working on the master plan, obtaining governmental approvals, and coordinating with governmental entities on off-site infrastructure improvements. It takes a lot of time and effort to start a new project of this scale from scratch, and our respective teams are working well together. The items on the slide that are checked have been completed. Let me go through those briefly. Of course, Latitude is literally in the center of the Bay-Walton Sector Plan, which is approved for a total of 145,000 units on the Bay County side. We worked with Bay County in installing a major sanitary sewer main along County Road 388 to serve Latitude. This line is complete. In February of this year, we obtained approval from Bay County for a detailed specific area plan, or DSAP, to enable Latitude. The DSAP is the second step and final step in the sector planning process. In March of this year, the Florida Department of Transportation started construction of a new $30 million-plus four-lane road from the future entrance of Latitude on State Road 79 to the airport entry road. This new road will create a new major signalized intersection on State Road 79, which is where we're planning on locating the sales center for Latitude. Planning has been underway for the commercial area along State Road 79 and the Marina Village along the Intercoastal Waterway. The joint venture documents have been drafted for phase one, a total of 3,500 units, and planning is underway for phase two, which is an additional 3,500 units. The Minto board is scheduled to approve the joint venture documents in June of this year. We anticipate breaking ground for the sales center this year in 2019 and having the first set of model homes open in 2020 and 2021. Slide 10 shows the planned gross capital allocation to execute the growth plan over the next 3 years. By gross, we mean it includes potential finance amounts. It also includes not only the cash we have in hand now, but cash we project to make over the next few years as new operating projects and home site sales start coming online. These are planned capital allocations that we believe are attainable, but obviously the timing and amounts are subject to change based on market and economic conditions. For residential, we have $300 million planned. For leasing, $470 million. Hospitality, $130 million, with a grand total of $900 million. When executing a growth plan, it's always important to have milestones. Slide 11 summarizes the milestones that we have by segment over the next 3 years. Home sites, the milestone is 1,000 lots per year. Apartment and assisted living units, the milestone is ownership or partial ownership of 1,300. Hotel rooms, ownership or partial ownership of 900. Commercial square feet of 1.5 million and 1,400 club memberships. This slide goes hand in hand with the capital allocation slide. Again, we believe these milestones are attainable, but obviously changes in market and economic conditions may impact these milestones. So what is the one key takeaway? This is the final slide, slide number 12. We can say this in a lot of different ways, but we chose the simplest way. Expect measurable multi-generational value creation. Thank you. Bruce and I would love to take questions now from shareholders.
Microphone so that everyone can hear you on the webcast. Can I ask if you have a question? Come on up to the microphone, state your name, affiliation, if any, if you're representing yourself, and I, George, will be happy to answer your questions.
My name is David Spear, work for Nitor Capital Management, shareholder in St. Joe. First, I would really would like to thank Bruce, George, Merrick, his team for the work you guys have done the last 5 years, turning this company around, putting it in a position that it is today. It seems like we are on the right path and that there's a lot of potential on the horizon, so I really, really appreciate it as a shareholder. The first question I have is on the slide, it mentions about $900 million of capital spend. And also the last slide, it says expect measurable multi-generational value creation. I believe it's not too difficult to spend $900 million and also to build the amount of units that you plan to build, but what are the actual economic returns that investors expect to receive? From this capital allocation. There's really no mention in the slides, no mention anywhere of actual the economic benefits. And so more or less a board level question, I'm just curious as to how it can be a $900 million capital spend could be approved without actual presentation of the economic benefits to shareholders.
Well, let me tell you that it is extensively discussed at the board as to what our expectations are and what we believe we should achieve projects. But I will tell you, it is my expectation as a significant owner and as a board member and as the chairman of the board that I expect that each one of our projects should, on average, achieve at least a 10% unlevered return. So you have to understand the $900 million CapEx is gross CapEx. Okay? So that's before financing, so but I should say it's before partner contribution. So if it's a joint venture, we expect each one of our joint venture partners to have significant, as they say, skin in the game. We expect our partners to have a significant amount of capital. So we expect that project, unlevered, to be at least 10%. And as an average, let's just call it an average number. And then, of course, it should be much more based upon a conservative level of financing, which we hope to fix to match the duration of the project.
I appreciate it. Just as a, in future, as a shareholder, if the company is going to spend, whether it's you know gross, net, that type of capital, I think it would be very helpful for shareholders to have some sort of a ideas to, you know, some specific type of economic return or yield that we will, you know, receive for doing so, because it is a pretty substantial amount of sum.
Well, I will bring that point up to the board directly after this meeting.
I appreciate
George,
that.
Is there anything else? You know, we want to be careful. You know, we think St. Joe's the point. We have to show it to you now, right? Talk, We've got to walk the talk. So the reason for that last slide, George and I, as George discussed, we have discussed, is that you should expect measurable outputs now from St. Joe.
I appreciate it. Another question for the board, maybe to bring up as well, is between 2014-18, I believe close to $600 million of shareholder capital was spent towards buybacks. And I'm fairly sure it was around $18 on average per share. And at that time, the average valuation was probably close to about $1.5 billion in equity value. Q3, Q4 of this year, all of a sudden buybacks stopped, and the stock was near an all-time low, reflecting a valuation of $800 million. So I'm just curious, from the board level, how do you justify that to shareholders of spending that much capital at, you know, two times the value, and then all of a sudden it's at $800 million, $12 per share, $13 per share, and buybacks stop?
Well, I would tell you that, one, we did buy some stock back, I believe 15, is that right, 15? But we spent 3 years developing a growth plan. And then the board of directors asked, the members of the board asked, well, okay, how are you going to pay for this plan, and is this plan going to be profitable? So as the plan was finalized, and given that the company has $250 million of cash, we want to understand, is that $250 million enough? And we always want to have a significant margin of safety in terms of, you know, we can't predict the future and future economic headwinds. So the board decided to initiate this growth plan and spend more time thinking about the actual CapEx that's going to be required by St. Joe to get all of these projects done on time. And I think as we progress through those projects, I think you'll see a balance between these projects, and we still have a buyback in place. But we want to make sure that everything we do, we do it in a very conservative, with a very conservative balance sheet.
I think that balance is important, because there's just as large, as someone who's followed the company for some time, I think there's just as great opportunity in buying back the shares, especially at those levels, as there is in any particular project you might have. So I think that's something that should always be considered. And then my last question and comment is...
Let me interrupt you.
Yeah.
Just one. I'll make sure we discuss this at the board meeting.
Greatly appreciative.
My pleasure.
I'll open up for some other questions. I don't want to take too much time, but I have one last one. But anyone else?
We're here for you.
I really appreciate that. Thank you, guys.
Any other questions? This is the time.
Hi, I'm Steve Gray, Gray Value Opportunity Fund. Just a really basic question. The CapEx timeline was really helpful. Given the phase that you're in, it makes sense that the CapEx would dwarf the recurring revenue. But how do you see the latter catching up over the next few years in terms of the relationship of the two?
Well, I think George would be best to address that in terms of the cycle times and the phasing. And the team has done a very good job in terms of having very discrete phases for each project, only having a maximum committed amount at any one point, and talk about cycle times, but please.
Yeah, it's an excellent question, and we actually spent a lot of time thinking through the sequence of the CapEx and the revenue that we're going to receive back. A couple of points of clarification about that $900 million. In our business, we have to plan out a couple of years out, because in our business, you just don't develop something and it happens pretty quickly. So 3 years is the planning horizon that we use for planning purposes. In 3 years' time, a lot of things can happen. We calibrate every project at the project level, at the budget business plan level every year, looking for local market conditions, any changes in those conditions, any changes in macro economic conditions. When folks look at our $900 million capital allocation number, one of the assumptions folks make is, well, that's, you don't have that kind of cash right now. A big factor of that number is the recycling of the cash that we anticipate over the next couple of years. And it's something that we track very carefully. We track very methodically. As these projects come online, we are making very specific projections of the income these projects are producing. And always, always, as we disclose in our business strategy, maintaining a level of liquidity. That's always important to us. We never want to get to a level where our liquidity is in question for a couple reasons. So it is something we track. It is something that we have our arms around fairly well, taking into consideration the recycling of the cash that will come back from the projects.
So you have numbers in mind. Because I can see how, obviously, the balance sheet is going to be bolstered by these one-off residential sales.
Right.
So you're going to have capital coming in. I'm just curious as to the side of the balance sheet that's recurring, how much would be, and I realize with so many projects going on, a normalized run rate is something that's very kind of ambiguous. But any other detail you provide would be helpful.
I'll repeat. We always are going to have a significant amount of cash in the bank,
mm-hmm.
right? Because there's great opportunity also in difficult times. So we always want to maintain significant liquidity. We always want to be the sort of masters of our own destiny. And that's going to, there's going to be a level of conservativeness that's there. So you'll see that. You'll always see that we have a sell. We're never going to be over-levered. We'll always be quite liquid, and while we go through these projects, and as I mean, we have a good 20 projects being initiated this year, and we have many more projects under consideration for 2021, which you'll hear about over time. So we just want to make sure that we can keep our word to our partners, to the community, to our employees, and. You're going to have to judge the pace and level. We think from this point forward, you should see quarterly progress at St. Joe. You should see the cash flows, revenues, profits, and it's going to be a steady buildup, I believe, for years to come. Of course, you know, the cycle still exists. It hasn't been outlawed, but when there is a cycle shift and we go into any kind of down cycle, we want that. We don't want to burn furniture to survive. We want to be able to take advantage of whatever, you know, whichever way the winds are shifting. So I don't know if I've answered your question, but we're going to be liquid. We're going to have a strong balance sheet, and we're going to go through as we ramp up, you know, the 20 projects this year. And the many other projects that we have on the sort of on the bulletin board right now, and you know, Latitude's a big project, 3,500 first phase, planning for a second phase of 3,500 based upon the initial progress of the first phase, three more communities in Bay County, Windmark, Port St. Joe. You may have read a few things about Panama City. I mean, there's a lot. There's a lot to do, and we want to make sure we have the wherewithal to do it.
One quick follow-up, which is an excellent point that you made. For example, this year we have 30 projects we're planning and initiating for the slide that we showed. Those projects are not random projects. When you look at those projects, there's a balance of recurring income projects. There's a balance of one-time residential lot sales projects. The reason why we have that balance is we have in mind getting to that run rate of recurring income.
That's really what I had in mind in my question, yeah.
We think very carefully about that because reaching that run rate requires a balance, and we think through that balance very carefully in selecting those projects. They're not random projects. Because you can see some of them are one-time sale of lots, others are recurring.
Thanks for taking my question.
So the CapEx should be correlated to our revenues, to our profits, given our expectations that we expect every single one of our projects to be reasonably profitable and, you know, and not at a stabilized rate, but at the beginning, and then it's the stabilized rate even more so. And as George mentioned, it's phased. So if the cycle does turn, we can pretty much start and stop on a dime. So the recurring profit should be building up, but rather than tell you what we expect are going to be. We'd rather just show you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Another question?
David?
Not to beat a dead horse, but just going back to the buyback again, because I couldn't really decipher. It wasn't exactly clear. So are you telling shareholders that, you know, going forward, that when you meet a balance, that if the stock were to, again, you know, go down to those levels, that the company is focused and will allocate capital towards buybacks? Is that something that's on the plan in the budget?
We still have a buyback in place.
Mm-hmm.
We still have capital allocated to buyback. I mean, you know, we have to, and we're balancing every week the ability of the projects versus the buybacks. Buybacks in and of itself does not create revenue. We need to now show our owners our ability to generate significant revenue and profits, right? But, of course, at a price, buybacks make tremendous sense. We went through a tremendous buyback period while we were in the planning stages, A, and we had hundreds of millions of dollars of excess capital. And we believe that long-term that was a very shrewd capital allocation move. I think it's proven to be the sale of certain of our properties.
I would just mention that if that is the case, and if it was a shrewd capital allocation move at $1.5 billion, then I can't imagine what type of move it would be at $850 million is the only point I would make. And
it
so
would,
I think
it would also be a shrewd move.
So that, therefore, one should have everything on the table in terms of, you know, making sure you're buying back next
every
time. Hopefully it doesn't happen.
Every project competes against every other project and buying back stock. We got to do it all. We have to build homes. We have to lease more commercial properties. We have to become a big hospitality company, right? We should be buying back our stock when it's cheap, and we have the excess capital to do so, and we have to do it all at the same time.
I appreciate it. And the last suggestion I would make is, outside of yourself, I would say there should be, when the next time the board meets, it should be considered to put a minimum share ownership requirement for the other directors on the board. Because I think if they had substantial skin in the game, the question of whether or not to buy back stock in Q4 wouldn't have been a question. It would have been, what do we need to do to buy back stock here? Because that would have created tremendous value for shareholders. So I think that should be something that should be considered, and I strongly suggest and recommend it. Thank you guys very much once again.
All right, thank
it.
You. And that will be another point we will bring up at the board meeting directly after this meeting. Are there any other points anyone would like to discuss or that we should bring up at the board's meeting after this meeting? Because at the end of the day, we're supposed to be representing you, the owners. So that's our job. Hearing none, well, that ends, I guess, questions. Stick around. Please introduce yourself to our directors. And thank you very much, and I hope to see you all again next year.
Thank you.